You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. As you guys know, I've been out of town for a week or almost 2 weeks. We did an Emory tour and I also went to visit my dad back in South Carolina. And I just got back from there. And I want to thank everybody who helped us build the Emory, the new bus. It's been a really fun project. We framed it all the way out and I'll get some pictures and stuff up to show everybody. But thank you to everybody who supported that. We're very, very happy and very lucky to have a fan base like we do. So thank you. The next thing that Emory's doing, in case anybody's interested, is we have a book that Aaron Lunsford wrote about our band. It's called Emory. I don't know what it's called, actually, but go to emorybook.com and you'll see it there. And we also just did an episode of the Labeled podcast for Tooth and Nail that's about Emory and how we came out of South Carolina in 2001. And, you know, we grew up rednecks and nowhere near a red light and never gone to a rock concert or anything like that. And there's some tape on there from some of our parents talking, and you kind of can get a feel for where rednecks like us came from and then eventually made it to the West Coast and in a band and got signed and that kind of stuff. But it's really just about our origin. And then the Lunsford book itself is really more about how our band works. What are the dynamics? What is each person in the band like? And what is their role and stuff like that? Aaron is kind of the expert on Emory. So if you're interested in Emory, and I know a lot of you guys are, then go to emorybook.com and check that out and listen to the Labeled podcast this week. And if you're not interested in Emory, well, ignore everything I just said, because it will be irrelevant to you. So the episode I have today is an episode where I was a guest on a podcast called the Vox Podcast. And there's a guy named Mike and Andy who do this show, and I think it's a great show. And as you know, I typically avoid or don't do much in religious stuff or Christianity on the Break It Down podcast, but that's because I get a big dose of that on the Bad Christian podcast, and I like to do other things on this show. But me being a guest on this show seemed to be pretty interesting to me and a lot of people, so I thought you guys would be interested in hearing me talk solo with them on this topic. But again, if that ain't your thing, skip the whole episode, and I'll be back next week. I've got some really good guests coming up, and things are going really well. Thank you to everybody that supports the Patreon page. Go to my website if you're looking for that. Having a great time doing all this, and I hope you enjoy this episode of the Vox Podcast. And if you do, go check out their show and subscribe to it, and I think you might enjoy it too. All right.
Break it down, Dada.
Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down.
Mike has had enough of his fanboy kind of fantasies come true in the Vox podcast. This one's for Andy. We're sitting today with Matt Carter, host, celebrity.
Mastermind.
Mastermind of Bad Christian Media, and now including publishing, podcasting, YouTubing. Anything I'm missing?
I mean, I don't keep track either. I just have
like
a bunch of stuff going, and I'm just waiting until some of it'll fail, so I don't have to do it anymore.
Well, the word I want to use is empire. Is that
empire,
a word you're comfortable with?
Well, you know, you could just think of me as a entertainment mogul, maybe. Whatever.
Perfect. And so Andy got me hooked into the Bad Christian podcast right when we were starting to think about our own. Andy, what was your first exposure to Matt and the crew? Just for the people that don't know.
Yeah, for sure. A friend of mine was like, "Hey, have you heard that podcast that the guys from Emory do?" And I was like, "No." And then he briefly explained it. And
I thought Emory was a college until you corrected.
Yeah, more than that. So I jumped in, I think, like early, like episode, like in the 40s or something like that.
When did you start it? How many years ago was this?
Over 2 years ago.
Well, it was in February. It must have been 2014.
That you guys started?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Podcast, I believe.
What was it?
We're almost episode 300 now, which is cool.
What Well, congratulations. What was it that started this? I mean, it seems like over the last year, the Christian podcast space has exploded. It seems like mm-hmm. you guys were kind of early into that space.
So.
Yeah. What was it?
Well,
that,
Christian podcasts have existed as sermon replays and stuff.
Exactly.
But, you know, right. As far as original content, yeah, I think so. So we were doing the real shortest way I can tell you is I've been in a band that does this screamy punk emo stuff where you put out 12 songs every 2 years, and it's a very, very focused thing. And so had a decent amount of notoriety and people know who I am, but I just always felt like they don't know me at all. Like I'm known right. by the, I mean, this whole personality. It's been frustrating to be known about without being known. I don't like that. I feel like it's, you know, my biggest frustration in the world is inability to communicate or to be misunderstood. It just drives me crazy to a fault. But I just felt like I'm uncomfortable with so many people knowing me but not knowing anything about me. So, that's just to speak about me, Toby and Joey, differently. But we thought we had all these thoughts and all these experiences we wanted to share. You can't share them all through your albums of a narrow genre,
right?
Or interviews never go good. Whenever we do press, it sucks so bad. Journalists at the level of people that interview us are horrible, almost entirely. I've never done a good interview.
Much like Christian journalists.
Yes, right. I mean, you know, it's okay. Like, it's not like Rolling Stones interviewing us. Maybe we could have said something good, but you know, when you get a bad interview, you're just not saying anything of substance. You don't feel safe. It just doesn't work anyway.
Yeah.
I just thought the set of experiences that we'd had coming up through Christianity and the Christian music industry and the punk scene and just being around the regular rock and roll scene for years is just too interesting not to share. Mm-hmm. And we just didn't have a good way to share the thoughts and reflections and stuff that we had. So we started trying to blog about it. And we just said, well, let's write stuff down that'll be kind of, you know, controversial but true. I mean, we're just trying right. to say stuff that's real because it's so obvious. It was obvious vacuum that nobody's telling the truth or being real. Everything's manufactured personas online and almost everywhere. So we thought maybe we'll just write our ideas down, but we're not good at writing, and I hate writing. I've always hated it. I've always hated school and writing and all those things. So, you know, we struggled through it, but immediately just from writing kind of honest, poorly written shit. I can't say shit. Sorry.
It's fine.
From writing some thoughts and being honest, it was people and being able to share it with our Emory fans. It took off immediately. So we had a lot of big response pretty quickly. So I was pretty encouraged about that, but I just still felt like I was doing homework if I ever tried to write something.
Right, right.
But I listened to podcasts. I was like, man, talking, that's what it's all about. We sit in the green rooms. We sit backstage. We talk with people from all over the world. This is the format. So I was like, guys, we got to do a podcast. It'll work. It will work. You trust me. This is going to work. But I had no expectation it would work to the degree it did. So
yeah.
we just did an episode. We did one pilot and kind of threw it away and then figured out how to put some sound in it. You know, I'm an audio engineer anyway, so that part wasn't hard.
Yeah.
And I thought I had a pretty good idea of what would work. And we just got on there and tried to just talk like we normally talk as best as we can and let people hear it. And it worked immediately. So when we put out our first episode, we had a little bit of the platform, obviously, with Emory and the blog that we've been doing.
Right.
And the numbers were way more massive than anything else that we could have expected or what people – it was just immediately like, okay, here we go. So
are there certain,
we abandoned trying to write blogs pretty quickly.
Yeah, seriously. Are there certain kind of non-negotiables for the kind of conversations you have or the kind of conversations you wanted to have that still kind of press in after 300 episodes?
Help me with that question a little bit more. Like what?
Like we were going to be ruthlessly honest. Like values that you guys said, this is what's going to guide this podcast that have stayed true for 300 episodes. So we're going to be honest. We're going to use real language. We're going to talk about real things. Like those sorts of things.
Yeah, those things for sure. I mean, I think that there's, you know, the goal's always been to try to do the best job we can of being like we are off air on air. And also there's a part of a principle where we live in different towns, even though Toby and Joey at one point lived both in the same town. We live in different places, so we literally can almost just catch up and talk like we would and have our hangout be public or something like that.
Right.
Because we don't get to hang out as much as we'd like to. And so it's just a way to just to do that and just see what happens. And we've changed, played around with some format stuff, but we haven't changed anything about what we're trying to do, I don't think at all. We've changed as people in 3 years. We've changed our opinions in 3 years all the time. But what we're trying to do, it seems even more clear than ever these days. That it's a little bit more intimidating than ever, and I worry about it. because it seems like it's easy to get in trouble. But I know if you just take a deep breath and tell the truth, I'm not interested in doing anything else.
When you say easy to get in trouble, do you just mean like PC stuff?
Yeah. I think that's the most dangerous one. So the Christian squelching has always been a huge problem, but we've figured out how to break through that. So that's one of the things I'm most proud of is people all in my whole life of being in the Christian music industry. I just see people being careful, toning it down, making safe choices, not being real drives me crazy. So I know that I've just always been looking to break that barrier.
Right.
And we've been effectively able to do that. And that I don't see that as a threat whatsoever. I don't give a crap what – you know, I feel totally free. I'm not worried about a backlash or it's going to hurt our sales or hurt our numbers. We've cultivated something where that doesn't happen. So I'm most proud of that. But on the other side, I really like the fact that we're kind of progressive and trying to accept new ideas and even move to what most would consider even more left or even more liberal than our upbringing or traditionally. We probably are headed in that direction to some degree. However, that side is very scary as far as when they want to attack or shut you down or make you look bad.
Right.
That I see is a little bit more danger than the Christian side. They're starting to look like Christian legalist people are starting to look a little bit more like yappy puppies trying to make noise, but you can ignore them. It's okay.
Right. But on the but on the liberal side, that gets nasty because you're not liberal enough.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's scarier to me at this moment in history.
Right. Yes. Because so on the journey from the conservative side, let's call it, is less intimidating because you've broken through that threshold of honesty and ruthless authenticity, but you're not liberal enough yet for some. And so I got wind of you didn't have enough women on or you didn't have enough.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Okay. So when you say that's where the fear comes is from that side now, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's a big fear. It's just here's the problem. Okay. Let me say it another way. It's actually not a problem. It's actually in a way a good thing because, I mean, it's got a bad edge to it for sure. Or malicious, but there's something amazing about having enough people hear what you're doing that you will get feedback that is totally dead on. Like it, you can tell some stuff's obnoxious, you can tell some stuff's malicious, whatever.
Right.
But you don't get away with anything. Like if you misspeak or disingenuous or go back on your word or playing a part or being obnoxious or even interrupt people too much, I hear it and they're right. I know they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you just have to separate what's true and not true or what's malicious or whatever. But I love the fact that somebody that's disingenuous, we're in this territory now that is policed so hard that at least that stuff's starting to stick out.
Right.
Which is making the whole climate super weird because you go, oh, that guy that I thought was just a trusted real dude seems like he was just – he's being disingenuous. Oh, he was faking this whole time. He's not even really like that. People are just starting to wake up to that notion that the media they've been consuming, even the pastors and left or right wing media. Oh, guess what? This stuff is super jaded and slanted and fake in a lot of places. So I love that that's exposed, but it's created a little bit of chaos and tumultuous stuff. So it's a really good and bad side of that.
So do you see Christian podcasting in general beyond the sermon? So it's just flooded now with all sorts of podcasts that some follow your format, some are, they're just all over the map. How do you see the podcast space filling places where, to use the old term, the body of Christ was lacking? Like what's the gift of the Christian podcast industry to greater Christianity in America as a whole?
Well, I mean, like you said, it's all part of the body of Christ, and somebody's got to be the armpit, so we'll be that. You know what I mean? But nobody else signed up for the job, and we can do it. But that's the problem that I have with the body of Christ is everybody wants to be just whatever the crown jewel of it. Like that, every church is like, well, we are, and this big, wide, all-encompassing thing to reach the most people,
right?
And I don't like that. It's
empire.
That's not right. That's everybody trying to do the same thing competitively instead of alternative things or smaller things. And I think it's basically equals lowest common denominator. I say it's the same as if you could only make one TV show, you would have to make Big Bang Theory. That just appeals to the broadest set of people and gets the best ratings. It's not the best show. Nobody thinks it's the best show.
Right.
But nobody can agree on what's the best show because some people don't like Breaking Bad and some people don't like, whatever. This is something counter to that. But at least we can all dumbly sit in a on our couch and veg out to Big Bang Theory.
Or just America's look, Funniest Home Videos. Yes. That'd be my vote.
Which actually is probably my favorite show. But and that's what churches have seemed to want to do. There's been no alternative. I mean, everybody thinks they're different, but everybody basically thinks they're getting it right, and everybody's competing for one part of the body of Christ, the way I see it. And I think you need way more stuff. And people, it's disrespectful to listeners and audience and congregation to think you need to have it all in package and give it to them instead of let them freaking pick and choose what that – and people don't like the language of pick and choose. I'm not talking about the Bible, but you're learning and everything you know about and care about. Of course you get it aggregated from all over culture. So it's completely obnoxious and disrespectful to pretend like a local church is your source of almost anything, in my opinion, other than the very narrow set of things that it can do. And so things like Christian podcasts or other people that are doing things way different is all good, no matter what, in my opinion.
What? How many other podcasts do you ever listen to? I mean, do you expose yourself to a lot of other podcasters or podcasts in the Christian space?
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge consumer of podcasts, for sure. And, yeah, I think probably all over the place. But I don't listen to a lot of Christian podcasts, but some.
Well, it's just an interesting – the Christian podcast space is an interesting space. You seem to have – the sermon, you know, kind of replay. Mm-hmm. You've got the discussion sort of panel. You've got the Q&A sort of mix. You've got Christian podcasts who do nothing but interviews. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you guys seem to have this unique space where you're doing a little bit of all of it. Mm-hmm. And so I was just wondering kind of what do you have thoughts about where the future of that space is headed?
Well, I do think in podcasting that it's a very, very – like it's blown up and everything, but it's still very small and it's still extremely new. So I don't think any of the best ideas have even been conceptualized yet in podcasting. I mean, I don't know the future of the format. I don't even have any huge predictions. But, you know, TV shows weren't good for 50 years until now. They're unbelievable. Like it took a long time for it to get to the you know, TV used to be this kind of goofy, hacky thing, and now it's unbelievable. So I think podcasting even more so, there's hardly no money behind it. It's independent creators that largely lack even experience in entertainment who are podcasting. So the future is just super wide open. So I'm very excited to see what will happen. But I don't think we're even scratching the surface yet on what could be done and how the medium could be utilized.
How do you feel, and maybe this is the same answer, but how do you feel about the future of the church in America? You seem to...
A little less optimistic.
Okay. I'm
sorry to interrupt you there, but I mean, if you just put that in the same context of the logic I just used, the church has had a lot of time. We've had a couple thousand years to work on it. And we seem to run into a bunch of dead ends. So that's – I don't know what the future of the church is. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not even super down on it. I'm just saying we've had a lot – we're in a negative phase currently. Like we've already – most of the good ideas have been had, and it seems like it's been saturated and formally refined and over-processed and overdone – and overanalyzed for so long that we're in kind of a quagmire. I think.
Yep. And
it's so, not brand new, or it'd be exciting. If you could erase everybody's memory about the church, start with the Bible and say, let's start over again, I think you get some great ideas. But we're not going to do that. So all we do is talk about how can we add something edgy to our Sunday morning thing at 11:15. Right. You're not going to get anywhere with that.
Right.
And I'd rather throw it out and start over, honestly.
Okay, and that's why mega churches have an expiration date.
I think so. Because,
It's just the repackaging.
You get on a technicality that they won't technically expire, go away. They'll always be. Like, there's still Amish people, right? So it's not nothing's going away. You know, it just won't be the power system and the dominant thing is all.
Why do you think that?
Because it's silly. It's obviously silly.
Well, it's obviously except you know you've got how many people go to Elevation? How many people? You know, are with Judah Smith and at Hillsong and whatever else. So, so in some cultural terms, it seems like business is booming, right?
Yeah, but I mean, you don't think that's going to continue, do you?
Oh, I do, but I'm interviewing you.
Okay.
No. I don't.
Well, I'm just trying to pose it in the obvious way that this is obviously silly. So, I'm not trying to be way ahead of the curve, but I don't think it takes a crazy future thinking person to feel like this is headed somewhere goofy.
Well, it seems like it's doing the same thing for an increasingly shrinking share of the audience. You know what I mean? That the audience that you're that is even attracted to that stuff is shrinking so dramatically, and so you've got to keep up in the entertainment value or the systems, the organization. I mean, that sort of thing.
Right.
So I may have said this in the episode, but I think about this a lot in biology. There's a term when you study evolution and stuff that says that gigantism often precedes extinction. And it's just when something becomes a big resource hog, it can become dominant, like a dinosaur, for instance. They right. needed a tremendous amount of resources, and they got so big, they became vulnerable. You know, like when an asteroid hits, it's not really going to kill all the bacteria, but the dinosaurs are, you know, a few degree temperature change sinks the whole species, basically. And so you see with the megachurches that you got to be realistic. There's so many stats that say, see, this church is growing, and every megachurch shows what their growth is.
Of course.
The other side of that coin is they're just siphoning off the churches that aren't as attractional on the corner. I grew up in the South. There's a church every 5 seconds away from each other. Those are going away. They're getting empty, and those people are going to Elevation for now. But they're never going back to those little churches. So Mars Hill, Elevation, if I'm taking the most cynical view, they're siphoning off all these Christian communities and pulling people into their system and getting their resources and their money, and they're going to chew a lot of those people up and spit them out, and they're not going back anywhere. So I actually see it as destructive to some degree.
Right.
And it's not like, I mean, people, I've seen it at Mars Hill, and I mean, so it makes me sound jaded or cynical.
You were a pastor there?
I was a deacon, a worship leader, a volunteer counselor, things like that. But I never was on staff. But I was there since 2004.
Oh, wow.
And left before it got – about when it got really insane. I left too late, to be honest. But what I saw there is – I mean, everybody that ever you went to church with just came from – they weren't new Christians. They just came from a smaller church. And now they go to our church. And then our church – destroyed itself, and those people didn't go back to their small churches, and a great number of them aren't even Christians anymore. So it destroyed people.
Yeah,
right.
It did that.
Yeah. So how do
you? And so, you know, some people have gone on to other churches, or the people that just I have to figure this out and persisted. They're still somewhere. They found a community, or whatever. But the people that were just trying to figure this out or be in the stream, they're like, screw this. Oh, this is the answer. And their eyes were open to the big mega church, and this guy has all the answers. And then you find out they don't. What do you do then?
Right.
You're out. I mean, unless you're super dedicated and you just can't get, you know, it leaves a lot of people just out. They're just, where do you go? I don't know. I'm not really sure anymore. That's a lot of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Double digits percentages, if not 50. I mean, it's not 50, but it's double digit percentages of people that came up, siphoned from a small church up to the mega church. It failed them, and now they're just. What are they supposed to do?
Yeah. Right. We call them refugees from kind of mega church culture.
Right.
Because it's not easy to go back to a small, stupider church that doesn't have the dynamic speaker and the sound and the lights and all that. That's not an easy regression to make.
Right.
I mean, because what we're saying is, I think, could we say that like what happened at Mars Hill is somewhat of a foretale of what we're seeing in that entire culture? Because like if it's, you know, we assume like, well, you know, eventually like something's going to happen at Elevation that's going to cause that thing to fall apart. Something's going to happen at X church or that
kind
of. But
it doesn't have to be an epic fail. Like I don't think you'll see all churches implode and dissolve like Mars Hill. That's not going to happen.
Right.
But they are going to change. They're going to slowly die, most of them. And they're also going to – the other thing I feel like is probably going to happen is they're probably just going to – because they're resource hogs and they're number driven and money driven, they're going to wind up just compromising a lot of their beliefs when they need to in order to survive. That they're totally beholden to the money given to them and their constituency or whatever you want to call it. So as the culture changes, they're going to just change. So you may have mega churches that grow up in the future that are, for instance, gay affirming. And then the ones that aren't will get smaller, or they'll flip because that's what they must do to keep up. So I believe that's the type of futures we'll see in mega churches.
Right. Yeah. It's just totally pragmatic, totally numbers driven.
Right.
So then what's the alternative? I mean, if you've got all these refugees, if mega churches are on the way out, where do you see space for people to actually encounter Jesus and each other and all that, you know, Christian-y stuff in community?
Well, I would say, first thing I would say there is I don't feel the necessity to tell that in the fact of criticizing something rightly or telling the truth that I'm also obligated to have a solution. I get that a lot. Oh, what's your solution?
Yeah, sure.
Big guy? Yeah. I don't have to have a solution for what we do with all the slaves when we abolish slavery to know that we need to abolish slavery.
Right.
Right. You know, well, what's your solution for the economy? What are you? How are you going to rehouse all these people? I don't know, but we got to knock this shit off. Sorry, I said that word again.
No, it's fine.
Do you know what I mean? Like that's that. So I don't think it's incumbent on me to have any solutions, first of all. But I do appreciate this conversation. I think that you empower people. And it's okay. It's okay to not have answers. I think if you respect people's minds and you empower them with truth and let them feel free and untether them from institutional stuff, then I think they'll figure it out. Or you know, as a collective intelligence, I think we figure it out. But as long as you're baby food feeding people and keeping them on the slow drip, I'm not that afraid of chaos personally in the church world.
Right.
I just not, you know, but I can see why some people would be. So,
yeah. So the alternative would be decentralized, empowered, entrepreneurs, almost spiritual entrepreneurs, looking at different forms, trying different stuff, failing a ton and seeing kind of where the spirit moves, I think that's about as far as we can go, but you know, you guys have given a lot of conversation to it and some thought to it. And so I was just curious, you know, the question I want to ask that is unfair to you is, okay, so let's say God calls you to plant a church. What's that thing look like?
I've thought about it a lot. And I used to think I was going to do that. Now I don't think I'm interested.
What would be pieces of it? If you've thought about it. I mean, and we're holding you to nothing, and this is all, all disclaimers apply.
Yeah. Man, if I could go far enough back in my Evernote, I bet I could find some notes. I think that the important things to do, I mean, it's easier to pick apart things not to do, for sure. And I just think that's the phase we're in.
We'll start there.
I would pick apart... here's the problem. As soon as you make any criticism, people, they just are so resistant to it. They'll go, well, you can't say that because I know one example where that's not true. But I know, but that's just not an intellectually reasonable thing to not allow any dialogue to happen. But I don't like paid pastors. Well, there's a verse says that pastors should earn their wage. I don't like it because I think it attracts the wrong people.
Ooh,
I think there's
like
one of the biggest problems in church culture is it attracts the wrong people for the positions of power. Youth ministers, Catholic priests, police officers are the same way. Substitute and elementary school teachers sometimes you get the wrong people attracted to a role, and you can't stop it. And the church has a bad problem of what's the word for it? It just has a bad non-confrontational benefit of the doubt culture that just allows for all kind of negative stuff where you can't criticize somebody, and it's just wrong. I mean, it's not good.
Yeah.
It causes a lot of harm and danger. So paid staff and the power of individual celebrities and staff members, I just don't like it. Even on the local small level, I think it's problematic.
Yeah.
So you've got to be looking for something that's more democratized. We have that freaking technology now to democratize stuff.
Right.
Better and let because the one guy isn't the guy who knows. It's everybody together is smarter than any one guy. I think that's basically a true thing about anything. And that's what I was saying before is the internet. All of my Twitter followers together know a lot more than I do.
Right.
Yeah.
The smartest person in the world's Twitter feed is smarter than he is. It has more information faster. That's right. No individual. One charismatic guy that studied a lot, been to seminary may have the actual most information if it's one-on-one competition, but the democratization, the utilization of technology should open up all kinds of things that reduce the amount of power or influence of a single individual. That's obviously, we know that now. The best politicians are unbelievably flawed and messed up and unable to handle a certain amount of power.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you got to start by fixing that.
I love that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so we start by having either bivocational or entirely non-paid staff.
I mean, I'm not making it a rule or something.
But I think that's really interesting.
I'd like to see where that takes us.
Yeah, sure. One thing that might inform this conversation, talk a little bit about what you've kind of seen on like the BC Club Facebook. So, because like I'm a part of that, I've jumped into tons of conversations there, and to me that feels like this very decentralized freeform community. You know, right? That's kind of been pulled around the conversations you guys are doing. But I'm always so fascinated when individuals will be like, "Hey, let's get together," or "I want to start a conversation on this thing." I mean, I haven't felt like I've been able to see something in a public space on like a national level or even like global level where all those ideas collide and it seems like people really want to have those conversations. I mean, does any of that stuff that's taking place there kind of inform, you know, a prospect that hasn't really been explored, you know, for a church?
So the BC Club Facebook group is an experiment, really, and it's a wild one. It's a zoo over there. I mean, it's completely unregulated, unmoderated, because that just seems in line with the principles of our show. And it changes, and this is true sociologically, but it changes. Everything changes at different size dynamics. For instance, a small group of eight changes after you get past 12. Mm-hmm. People start to behave. You ever notice that? People start to behave differently until, you know, and that's just built into human physiology in the brain, I imagine. You know, so when the club had 100 people or 200 people in it, it was had a very different vibe than it does now. It's 900 or 1,000 people, and it's like a high school now. So it's as big as a high school, and then you have all the requisite things that go along with that. So it can be unbelievably crazy, and then there's subcliques and subgroups and teams, and that stuff just seems to be part of natural human dynamics. But it's founded around our show of people that are like-minded. So what's interesting about it is the experiment of having it uncontrolled would make most people uncomfortable. Most people would have jumped in way earlier and said, "We're not doing this. We're not doing this. We're going to do all these things, and this is what we're about." But I'm not going to do that. I'm not interested in doing that. So if people want to ruin it, I hope they don't. I hope it can police itself. But my principle tells me you got to leave it be and let it do what it's going to do and allow the individuals to figure out what relationships they want to make. And hopefully it's productive. But it is a bit crazier once it hit over 700 for whatever reason, it seemed to change a little bit.
Yeah, because I guess what I'm wondering is like,
which it must be true about big churches too. I mean, if you have a church of 14,000 people, there's inherent things in there that are going to be harmful, no matter what.
And that's kind of what I was going to say, because like how much does that sociology experiment stand contrary to people in large churches? I mean, it almost feels like the larger church organization ignores that's actually happening, and trying to inform from the top and trying to maintain an aspect of control. But if we're really honest about it, I mean, it probably looks a lot more like that than they're willing to admit.
Oh, of course. But yeah, that's just what I'm saying. The church has a horrible culture of not refining itself. And it's really sad. And it comes at a really big cost and harms a lot of people. But yeah, a big enough church has to be more authoritarian. It has to be. I don't like that. I mean, maybe a lot of people do, but I don't like it. Seems wrong to me. I mean, the more I see it and think about it, so that's why you worked at Mars Hill
because they were very anti-authoritarian.
I'm also attracted to it. You know, you can see why somebody would be attracted to that. You want a king, like in the Old Testament. You want a solution that's a human that knows something, because you don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. That's not easy. It's easier to say he knows. That's how humans work. So of course you want somebody to know, but at some point to keep control and keep that up, it becomes worse. So on one hand, I was attracted to Reformed theology and Mars Hill and Mark Driscoll because it seemed like it had answers at a time when I desperately wanted there to be answers. Additionally, it grew as a culture and got larger and became obviously more false and controlling and authoritarian over time as well. So even the church that it was in 2005, I thought was badass. I wish that still existed.
Right.
But nothing stays the same, and that's true about anything. So it didn't stay that way, and I'm at a different place as, you know, over time too. So nothing stays the same. So keep that in mind with whatever you're trying to design or do. I don't know if I'll be podcasting in a year. It's not going to stay the same. I've been in a band. What is it supposed to do? Last for 40 years? I mean, it's not going to stay the same. Whatever you build, it's just not going to stay.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you're supposed to do with that, but if that's true, it should inform you a little bit instead of trying to build the biggest empire that can never be toppled. That's goofy.
Yeah, and it seems like you want to build something that's adaptive, that can moves quick, that can like respond to feedback, you know, and all of those like anti-institutional things to make it more of organism than organization, you know, all of that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, if the last 10 years have shown us anything, we're having conversations in the church now that we would never have had.
Right.
About subjects, about doctrinal issues. I mean, that we, mm-hmm. I mean, growing up, I grew up in the Midwest, would never have a million years thought we would be having conversations about ordaining gay folks as pastors and bishops mm-hmm. and leaders. And you know, I mean, and that just seems like it's going to increase in right. speed.
It will. It's interesting. I don't know if you want to go this direction with it or if you put much thought into it, but I'm kind of interested lately in thinking about the parallels of fundamentalism from the Muslim world and the Christian world. Like, how do you want fundamentalists of other religions to behave or evolve?
Right.
And would that not be true about yours? Because, well, yours is the one that's right, where you need to stick to it. And no matter how it seems weird, you know, like, I don't know. That's a little bit confusing because you say, yeah, but our book is the right one. So we do need to stick to everything it says. But theirs, I hope they kind of let down the super literal stuff.
Right.
Right.
Right. Relax
right.
a little
right.
bit.
Right. Hey, but come on, you know, just update it as you go here. But you don't want to do that with yours. But you got to kind of sit with that a little bit and ask how, you know, what does fundamentalism mean? You
right.
know, like, to what degree can you be fundamentalist and be missing the big picture? Or I don't know. I mean, that's the wrong idea. I'm not sure, but it's worth thinking about.
Is that does that in kind of summary sort of describe your journey? I mean, I don't know what kind of church you were raised in. You know, would you have called it a fundamentalist church that you grew
up
in?
Well, the interesting thing about me, as opposed to Toby and Joey's, I was raised in a very liberal Presbyterian church in the South where everybody else was evangelical and Church of God and just super charismatic where I grew up. And so I'll make this as short as I can. I grew up thinking as a 8-year-old that clearly these people at my church don't believe this stuff. This is just something we do. Like, it was liberal to the degree where I was like, well, no, these people don't even believe this stuff, and neither do I.
Right.
Is kind of the experience. I mean, yeah, we go to – yeah, there's – I thought it was like Santa Claus. Like, this is just baby stuff that we do. I know it sounds silly, but I feel like I was looking at it sociologically as a kid going, well, why – I mean, Daddy, you don't believe – I mean, come on. Anyway, we'll go along with it, and our culture did a lot. So then when I became – so I was just waiting till I learned enough about the world where I could shed religion, because it was clearly just a tool for dummies or something. I don't know what I thought it was, but
– yeah.
So I was into science and evolution and debating that in middle school. Like, okay, come on, let's figure this out. Your stuff is silly, obviously. But then I had a spiritual experience and became convinced that the Bible was true. But where I grew up in still wasn't getting it. So I became, about the time I was in college or something, convinced that there was something actually real there, and I just hadn't understood what it was yet. So I took to like reading the Bible and learning it and trying to understand what it means. I didn't trust a lot of other people. I couldn't find anybody else that I didn't think was a goofball talking about it, because the charismatic goofballs in the South were just like, they clearly didn't seem like they had a good grip on it. And then the liberal people didn't seem like they believed it. So I took to trying to look and search, and it took me probably 10 years until I found Reformed theology, smart people on the West Coast that were culturally cool at Mars Hill. And I was like, yes, this is real. It does exist. There is a way. There are answers.
Got it.
It could be super logical. I was really attracted to Reformed theology. So, you know, I went in pretty deep on that and thought, yes, this is what I like. This makes sense. I'm going to get this figured out. And it dead ended in some other way. It turns out I just was blind to its flaws. And so, you know, I'm still convinced that Jesus is real and the Bible is true.
Right.
Whatever those things mean, I'm not exactly sure.
Do you feel like, though, as you talk about moving left, and I didn't know if that was a singular you or if that was the podcast or the three of you together versus how you were raised. So that may not be true of you. You went from uber left to uber right to more middle. Is that fair to say?
Well, certainly even a liberal Presbyterian church in South Carolina isn't uber left, but maybe within Christian terms it is. But I would say if that's probably my journey. I would also clarify that I have no intent of going right or left. I'm just observing the facts on the ground that I'm farther left. I hate the terms liberal and left or whatever. I'd actually go progressive, and now I don't. Progressive to me is more of a pure term in the sense that it means you're progressing. You know, I don't know what I would don't necessarily align with anything ideologically about people that are self-identified as progressives. I think they're becoming quite regressive in many ways. But I'm here to learn more, ask deeper questions, and be more mature in my understanding. Instead of trying to make everything black and white and simply getting it right, it seems a little bit more like maturity to me to ask questions and go deeper. But outwardly, or as it seems on the ground, when you do that, you move farther from the right. So maybe you describe it as left. Now, I would say that is also true for Toby and Joey, but I wouldn't stop there. I would say it's true for y'all, and I would say it's true of the evangelical church and Christianity and culture at large. Now, the extreme lefty people, I mean, I don't even know about them, but in general, I think culturally everybody's kind of softening on the conservative and rigidity and those kinds of things, right? Like, isn't that kind of society as a whole?
Absolutely.
I think it is. So.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And the safer you make it to have honest conversations, the more ideas you're exposed to, the more people's stories you hear. Some of the things that seemed obvious, 10 years ago don't seem so obvious anymore. What's the number one reason that I hear from people who become gay affirming? Well, it's I met this person or I had this relative that's what's so the democratization of all of this has really opened up storytelling as a means for theological rethinking.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like, how many things are there out there that are headed a trending a direction that there's any possibility of it reversing? Like,
right.
Yeah.
Sexuality, marijuana, alcohol. Okay. Dancing. You think we may go back on rock and roll dancing and tattoos at some point as we further clarify and understand theology better? If we get better theological tools, might we return to outlawing dancing?
No, you see it with divorce.
Yeah.
Right.
It's become totally accepted. In the church. So you'll see it with sexuality. You'll see it with the interesting place that's not happening yet are the political spaces. Those places aren't in any way, shape, or form moving. They're just becoming hardened.
Well, that's troubling in its own way because that points to the fact that people's identities are more deeply way than they are as Christian.
That's right. Really sad. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And politicians now are playing on that in ways that are. Right. Unbelievable.
Yeah, we're in a little bit of a dangerous time as far as manipulating of people. Like, it's easier than ever before. Like, as we get better at it, like, I mean, think about what Sitting Ducks people were the first time used car salesmen worked up their shtick. They're Sitting Ducks for the snake oil salesman that traveled town to town. You'd never seen that before. You're done. Yeah. It doesn't matter how smart you are. You've never heard that rhetoric before. You don't know how it's being used against you, blah, blah, blah.
That's right.
And so we have a time now when tons of people and politicians and advertising and marketing have just unbelievable data and metrics and Facebook and social media. Even AI is good at making you do stuff that you're not even aware it's making you do.
Right.
It's a little scary. So people are being manipulated at an all-time level, and they're starting to come online one at a time. Every day somebody wakes up and goes, wait a minute, I think he's just saying that. Every day more and more people wake up
Matrix.
To that, but that's the phase we're in. I mean, you'd say that about your preacher or guy on the news, like, wait a minute, why is he talking like that?
Right.
And that's every day there's more and more people coming online to that.
And there have to be places where those people gather to have the reawakening conversation. And so I see what you guys are doing, and I see the podcast space, if it's done well, is a place where those conversations are happening that never would have happened 2 years ago. Now, do you guys get flack for being specific in criticism of other pastors and other churches? Because every now and again, I'll hear you know, you should not, you shouldn't take shots at other people in the body of Christ. You know, God will judge them, blah, blah, blah. Have you approached them mm-hmm. privately, so on, so on, so on. You guys at least seem willing to say, well, there's something seems
that's
funky of
nonsense.
Elevation.
Yeah,
something
that's
seems
nonsense,
funky at Mars Hill, you know, blah, blah, blah. Why do you think so? Why do you think so? Because it seems like you guys and others play this sort of prophetic, and I don't want to go Bible-y, but kind of a prophetic role in speaking truth yeah. against some of that nonsense.
Well, I mean, so do journalists with podcast, with politicians or companies.
Yeah, exactly.
Or
yeah,
the government.
But this is like, new. But this is new in the Christian space. It's not new in the secular space. This is new in the Christian space in ways it's not new other places.
I mean, you can make the same argument for government, that government is ordained by God and you render it into what is Caesar's, and we shouldn't
Absolutely.
Criticize politicians on either side of the aisle because they're the ones that are in charge of us. And come on, you got to give them the benefit of the doubt. That's nonsense. That's preposterous. The fact that we have people speaking out and holding politicians accountable and trying to discover, you know, inequity is a good thing for everything in the world. Why wouldn't it be so in the church? That's why you get hidden people doing really bad stuff, or even pedophiles and abuse. That's where that comes from, because you don't want to question the people of God.
Right.
That's us.
Right.
That's nonsense. It's preposterous. It's dangerous. So I would never. I mean, the difference is, I do have a line that I would draw, and it would be that I can't stand – I think I'm in a sweet spot here. I could be wrong, but I think the sweet spot is that it's wonderful and necessary to criticize, especially if you use humor and satire and stuff like that. People
right.
can handle that with
right.
everything else, so they should be able to with the church. But
right.
the point is to criticize rightly. What I don't like – that we see a lot in the media is that when you are seeking to harm or destroy people because you don't like what they think or
Got
what
it.
They do.
Yes.
So
yeah.
although I may not like Stephen Furtick, I'm not calling for him to be fired or destroyed. I don't like people are for Bill Maher, or Kathy Griffin. I don't like that. I hate that.
Right.
I think Bill Maher is what he is. Kathy Griffin is what she is. More power to them. Like them, don't like them. Criticize them all you want. But don't organize a campaign to try to get them fired and lose their livelihood and make an example out of them. That's tribal and that's dangerous. And I'm not trying to harm a person.
Right.
But anybody deserves to be criticized. That's just normal, especially if you're a public figure. And especially, I mean, that's part of the built into our podcast. We constantly criticize each other. And that's why we're balanced people. And that's we've always done
yeah.
that our whole life. Like we don't have our band is a pretty democratic band where it's complementary in strengths and weaknesses, and we don't let anybody get away with anything. So that's all we're doing is extending that to the larger and larger group. I think that's necessary. When you get yes men, give me a break. You know that's wrong. You know it is. So that's criticizing somebody. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At what point, or do you ever hear this? At what point do we have to move beyond the questions and the criticism to building something? You know, do you feel like, and I just don't know the answer to this. Do you feel like, what are you building at Bad Christian in terms of the podcast? Is it a culture? Is it a set of values? Is it a movement? I mean, what are you building?
I'm trying to help more people wake up, I guess. But that implies like I know something, which I'm not even trying to imply. I'm just trying to, I'll put it this way. I am trying to clear out elbow room. I'm trying to make elbow room for other people. I'm just going through a jungle with a machete, and I don't care. When I get through the other side, I'm gone. I don't care what y'all do, but at least
right.
maybe y'all can get through the jungle now. And if I say something really embarrassing or vulnerable about myself or look really stupid on air and it's okay, well, I know that that'll have a profound effect to
That's
the people
right.
that listen are willing to do that in their local communities or with their wife. Oh, Joey talked about something super bad he did with his wife, and now somebody else can have that conversation at work. I don't need any credit for it. It doesn't need to be part of my institution or some proprietary community that I build.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Right.
But if you can hear me be obnoxious and I'm okay, then you're going to be okay. You can tell the truth too.
Yeah.
That's my only goal.
Okay.
And then there's plenty of people to figure stuff out. So, and I don't know if they're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Or I don't know if it'll be the next generation or two from now that anything gets better. It may get worse for three generations in a row, for all I know.
Right.
But I'm pretty confident that step one is, you know, just get clear out some elbow room, give other people breathing room. So if that makes me the fool, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean I don't need to be the leader of anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
Sure. And the whole thing strikes me like as – kind of just positionally where all this stuff is taking place. Like we've, you know, Mike, you've made comments in the past of like more on the political side of like, you know, I can't wait till this next generation like moves on, you know, like and how that might shape politics and how that might change our future. I mean, a lot of the, it just seems like a millennial generation that's kind of stepping into this is our early adopters. They change faster, they move quicker, and they're usually significantly more willing to open up conversations and go into dangerous places. And it does fascinate me that the type of people that are in very authoritative power, both politics, a lot of big church leaders and that kind of thing, are still kind of part of this tradition over the past 30, 40 years for where that's how it's supposed to look. So it's I could totally agree that the natural progression of change is kind of that's just upon us. We're just kind of in the middle of it. You know, obviously 15 years from now, it is all going to look different. I am just very curious as to how that's going to look in 10 to 15 years with a generation that is so adaptive and so willing to change. And like how, you know, that's obviously a massive hypothetical imaginative idea, but I just
still blows my mind that 20 somethings are attracted to mega churches.
That's what I wanted to say, because I was like, but why then do those mega churches still thrive with these 20 somethings? I mean, and Barna, like in September last year, released a thing. It was like, you know, these churches above 3,000 people, this is 6% of the entire church populations that are out there, but yet they're the ones that get the most airtime. They have the loudest voice in the space. And so how much of it is a distortion of us seeing that as a reality versus all the other small churches that do exist under 500 people that make up like 54 or 60% of like the actual nation's churches? Right. Like that's I kind of get a little bit boggled when I think of the numbers, but yet when I try to analyze culture, I'm quick to look at what's happening in mega church spaces. Are these just all a bunch of idiots that are following some guy, or like what's actually happening? And that's tough for me.
I don't know. I resist the urge to make. No, I don't. I like to make predictions.
Yeah,
but I don't think my batting average will necessarily be that high. So I try to make predictions vague.
That's the key.
Yeah, right. I know. But I think you should resist the urge to think that you know at all what's going to happen to some degree. Like you can follow a trend. And say if this trend continues, this is what this will look like. But you don't really know, and certainly you can't predict how to change it or shape it. So I'm just going to ride it,
right,
and just see.
Right.
I'm just not scared of whatever it might mean. I guess I don't know another way to put it. So, I don't know what's going to happen. I think. I get the sense that it's insane that 20-year-olds are going to mega churches, but I feel like it's in a way it's a last gasp, or it's the okay. I'll put it this way: mega churches are unbelievably effective and efficient at what they do, attractionally, and they know how to answer questions. They've preemptively thought of all the pushback that you're going to give. They've already addressed it before you cognitively even pops in your mind. It's a manipulation game to some degree, like any corporate thing. They have big data, big money, big marketing, and that always works on individuals. It just always does.
Yeah.
I mean, there'll be people that join cults forever. They'll never stop. So it's proportional to somebody's desperation for concrete answers is how big the megachurch will be. So as we mature as a society, it will be sillier and sillier.
Yeah. I think that's it. Yeah. It just culminates in affirmation on what you guys are doing, what other voices in the space are doing. I mean, to the point you just made, I mean, even thinking of the progression of big data and technology and AI and everything else that's being made available for tools for those types of organizations to take advantage of. Personally, that does terrify me a little bit. I mean, Vice wrote an article on some of the big data that they used with Brexit, and then how there's some interesting tie-ins in some of the GOP politics with some of that stuff, and you're just like, dang, that tech actually exists. And so it's kind of how much more that becomes available for very independent organizations to take advantage of. I think it creates a curveball that we don't see coming, you know, and I have no idea what that's going to be like.
Exactly. There's tons of, if you look at history, it's just loaded with curveballs that you never expected. How World War I started, for instance, was almost random. And you see these flashpoints in history that just are not predictable. So we'll see some of those, and you just can't predict them. That'll change things way more profoundly than slow, steady progress we think we're making towards X, Y, and Z.
Right.
There'll be some curveballs that just unanticipated, whether it be technological, climate, sociological war. I mean, who knows? There's going to be curveballs that you can't possibly expect.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
No, Matt, dude, you're such a stud. Thank you so much for your time today. This has really been fun. I just think the conversation points and the questions are really, really good. I feel like the future holds this requirement that the people of God, you know, release their grasp on the forms that got us this far. Yes. And so I appreciate a lot of what you've been saying. So, where can people find you? Can they find you specifically on Twitter, or is it just the Bad Christian Twitter feed, or how do people find you?
Yeah, my Twitter's Zod Carter is my Twitter handle, but yeah, find me there, but badchristian.com. You know, yeah, you can say our pod. We do a bunch of other podcasts ourselves and host, you know, release and help other podcasts that we think are helpful and cool to put out. So you can find a bunch of different stuff that suits your speed. If you don't like our show, or
We're waiting for the invite, my friend. We're just sitting here waiting for the invite. So
you got it.
That. Anyway, my friend, thank you for your time. Andy, any last words?
No, I have no last words. I was going to ask Matt if you had any last words, but.
No last words. Never. That's a question that's never. Does anybody ever answer that? I'm not criticizing your question, but that's a terrible question, isn't it? Like, yeah, what does anybody ever say? Last words.
Any last words?
It feels like you're on the spot, you know?
Yep.
Okay, then no last words.
No last words, man. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your time.
Hi, I'm Emma.
And I'm Joe.
And we're the professional book nerds. Two Mondays a month, we interview authors and talk about their upcoming books, what drives them, and their go-to order at the cafe.
On Thursdays, we share recommendations and dive into topics readers face, like, how do I actually read the books on my to-be-read list?
You can find the Professional Book Nerds podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to learn more about us? Our website is professionalbooknerds.com, and you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at ProBookNerds.
We hope you'll come and listen, and as always,
happy reading!
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today, such as Liz Stokes of The Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, man, I gotta hear that. Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts. And new episodes come out every Monday.